This is the Michael K. Show podcast. Listen live weekday afternoon starting at 3 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.
This is Hank Azaria, and the Michael K. Show starts now on 98.7 ESPN. Have a great show, boys. Hey, Don, let's go Mets.
But when? And a good afternoon, everybody. This is indeed the Michael K. Show. We thank you for joining us on this Friday. It's Friday already, February 18th, 2022.
On TV.
Yeah, Michael K., Don LaGreca, Peter Rosenberg, we're all apart, but we're together for the next 4 hours, the other 20, and then the remaining 48 over the weekend. That's your responsibility. Hope you're all doing well. Another beautiful day bodes well. Spring is in the air.
Yeah. Woo.
But Major League Baseball did say that the first week of spring training games have, in fact, been postponed.
Done.
And they released that about an hour ago. It makes sense. Obviously, the first scheduled game that I was going to do was February 26th. That's the first game on the Yankee spring training schedule. Not happening.
Now, would you have been down there?
I would have gone down there, yeah. Okay. I would have done the show from there and the games from there. And then now they're saying March 5th. We'll see. You know, we talked a lot about this with Passan yesterday, and
he brought it.
He did bring it. And the funny part is that after we got off the air, I thought that there was a positive development. And the positive development is that the owners on the negotiating committee are flying into New York on Monday, and they plan to meet every single day.
Yay!
So that would tell you that there is a sense of urgency on both sides. Now, meeting every single day, if both sides are intractable, it doesn't mean anything. It just means that they're going to hate each other even more. But if they're flying in, these men don't fly in for no reason, just for the optics of it. If they're flying in, maybe they're willing to move a little bit. Maybe the players, since they want to meet every day, are willing to move a little bit. And I think both sides are going to have to move. We'll see if it gets done. But that, to me, heartens me just a bit that there's still a chance that the Major League season could open on March 31st, but we'll see.
Well, getting together every day is huge, because the problem with not talking is that you can't get anywhere, and the days tick off the calendar, and you can't have a settlement if they're not together talking. Now, do I think they'll talk for a week, and then they'll get into a fight and break up for another week? Yeah, I'm sure there's going to be ins and outs, ups and downs during the course of this, but the fact that this early they're willing to lock themselves in a room and try to get something done, That's a good sign.
But one thing, though, Don, if they're going to get, you know, break off talks for a while, that's not good. They've got to get it done next week if they want opening day on March 31st, because the latest you could go is February 28th. So, what is it? Monday would be the 21st. That's it. You need that week. You got to get it done by that week in order to have the games on March 31st. So we'll see.
But don't be surprised we get to the end of that week and we hear that talks have broken off. And I'm just saying it seems like it would be a little too clean for them to get together and resolve it next week. It seems like they're both too stubborn to cave that quickly. But we'll see, because the owners are going to lose some money on these spring training games, obviously. So how much does that affect them? Probably not a lot. And I'm sure there's a line of demarcation they have in their head of how many games they're willing to sacrifice, and if they really want to win, they're going to take it to that line. And the players will do the same thing.
We'll see. A lot riding on this. So we'll be monitoring closely. We've got the power of Buster Olney and Jeff Passan and all the investigative arm of ESPN, and we'll have the latest on everything that's going on.
Honest, where else would you go? I mean, really, between Passan and Olney, you got it all.
You got it all. You got it all. Actually have it all. I got a haircut today. I'm looking at myself on the TV right now, and I really, really look like Walking Death. It's unbelievable. I've got dark rings under my eyes. It shows you how much I miss my family.
You do miss them? That's nice.
I really do miss them.
When are they getting back?
They're getting back tonight.
Oh.
You're excited?
I am excited. I really miss them. I mean, I sit around, I walk around the house aimlessly. Don't talk to any. The only time I talk is for the 4 hours during the show. I don't utter a word.
Well, you
for the other 20 hours. No. Yeah, you know what? I do say, hello, girl. Well, whatever. That's about it. Thank you, Don. You know me well. I do talk to Barb.
How's the poop been the last few days?
Completely
not yours,
stopped.
Hers.
My poop's been fine, but she has stopped. She only goes outside now.
Michael has also stopped feeding her.
Right.
No. I feed her all the. I think I feed her more than anybody because she has this. Golden retrievers have this look that every time you eat, they look at you like Oliver. Please, sir. You know. I end up giving her food, I really shouldn't.
I have one like that too. It never ends.
It's unbelievable.
Nancy had a Brittany Spaniel that was so beautiful, and she would just put her head on my knee and just look up at me, and you could not.
Wait, was this Nancy or the Brittany Spaniel?
Nancy.
Oh, she put her head on your knee?
No, the Brittany Spaniel.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Don, right?
It's my wife we're talking about.
Can't put her head on your knee?
No, I don't know why she would do that while we're eating. I mean, if she wants a piece of what I got, I give it to her. I don't suggest to put her head on my knee.
She could just ask.
Yeah. Brittany didn't have the capability to speak, so she would put her head on my knee, and I'm like, I'd melt, and I would give Brittany what she wanted.
By the way, that's the name of Don's 11th book.
Give Brittany What She Wanted?
Yeah, that's exactly right. Giving Brittany What She Wanted. It's like the Pam and Tommy story.
Yeah.
It's the Don version.
You know what? I was feeling so down yesterday, Peter. I'm sorry, Don. I didn't want to watch the Ranger game. So I worked out right after the show. And then I turned on the first episode of the last season of Ozark. That's a pick-me-up.
No, it's not.
Oh, my goodness.
But
so
it's good.
They should do it in black and white. They really should. Why even have color?
It's damn good, though.
It's great. I'm a big fan of what's-his-face.
Bateman?
Bateman's great at everything.
He's good
he does.
In everything.
Yeah. I think I recently discovered that Bateman is a sneaky national hero.
He really is. And he's on a lot of women's get out of jail free card list. He and Paul Rudd.
I could see that.
Yeah, you know, everybody thinks, well, it's going to be Brad Pitt or George Clooney. A lot of women go with Bateman and Rudd.
They love Bateman and Rudd. It's true. I wonder what Bateman's like in real life.
I think he's like the guy that everybody in Hollywood likes. I mean, it seems like he's friends with everybody. Like he has Jennifer Aniston over and Jimmy Kimmel. Like everybody wants to hang with Jason Bateman.
And he plays the same character, like the cooler head prevailing, like in
Horrible Bosses.
Horrible Bosses, in Arrested Development. I haven't seen Ozark. I don't know if he plays that role.
He's kind of a cooler head in Ozark.
Yeah.
He is.
Well, speaking of cooler heads,
What
is going to happen, and we touched on this just slightly yesterday, but what's going to happen with Aaron Judge? You know, with the interview that he did with Ryan Rucco and CeCe Sabathia on R2C2, what's going to happen? He said he wants to be a Yankee. But he kind of like said, if it doesn't work out, I'm going to cherish the memories here, which kind of told the Yankees, listen, I want to be here, but don't think that I'm going to get walked over. If it ends, it ends. And I'm just curious, we were talking before the show, do Yankee fans look at him as a must-have? Because if you look, when Aaron Judge is on the field, it's about as good as you get.
Yeah.
I mean, he might be that next level below a Mike Trout. He's that good. He does everything. He's an outstanding defender. He has a great arm, runs the bases well, hits for power, and is one of those guys, although he strikes out a lot, he's not hitting .215. He's hitting close to .300. So he's the total package. Now, he's going to turn 30 in April, and I think therein lies the rub on what you do on a long-term deal. Because, you know, those that are right-minded and just don't let emotion play into it say, well, listen, the Yankees probably want to sign him to a 6-year deal. They probably stretch it to 7. If they give him $35 million a year, we're talking about a nice chunk of change. But would he, in fact, take 7? Now, if you think, well, who's going to give him more? Remember one thing. When Albert Pujols became a free agent, he was 32 years old. And some people wondered if he was really 32.
Right.
He was 32 years old, and the Angels gave him a 10-year deal at 32. And again, there was some wonderment whether or not he was really 32. So let's say he was 32. It was a legitimate 32. They gave him a 10-year deal. Take a look at the last 5 years of that contract. Talk about a sunk cost for the Angels. And then they released him in the final year, so they ate the entire thing. Mm-hmm. It was a terrible contract because they didn't win. And even the 5 years that he played well, he didn't play as well as he did with the St. Louis Cardinals.
Right.
And when the Cardinals, I mean, he was an icon with the Cardinals. And when you saw that they didn't match the 10 years, they probably said there's no way it's going to last. So, but other teams might take the chance with an Aaron Judge and say, we'll take the sunk cost the last 3 years, and we'll gamble that until he's 37, he's going to be great. What do the Yankees do, and what do the fans want them to do?
There's a couple of things at play here, Michael, that we didn't really discuss yesterday, and that's injury. Now, the fan base probably has no problem giving the contract. He played 148 games last year.
And the only games he really missed of any length was because of COVID.
Right, and you're not playing 162 games anyway. Even in his monster rookie year, he played 155. Okay, so, but what you worry about is 2018, 112 games, 2019, 102, only played in half the games of the 60-game schedule in 2020, played 28 of the 60. So I think Yankee fans are really curious. They should be smart and say, let's not give him anything yet. Let him go out there, be a beast in 2022, play 150-plus games, compete for an MVP. That'll be two straight years of being healthy, and then I'll feel good about giving him a long-term contract. But, Michael, if he gets hurt again and plays 100 games, are you willing, at a guy that's going to be 31, give him a 6-7-8-year deal for a guy that's really only put a couple of full seasons up because he's gotten hurt, and you know that's not going to get better as he gets older? So we know when he's healthy, he's a monster, he's a beast, he's the best player on the team. But when you already got Cole under long-term, you already got Stanton long-term, if you get Judge and he ends up being injury-prone for the length of that contract, that's going to be an issue. So I think he needs to stay healthy this year.
Now, the interesting thing is, if you sign him now and you take the risk that Don's talking about, you could probably get him for fewer years than if at the end of the season he becomes able to be bid on by the other 29 teams as well. Because all you need is one really desperate rich owner.
Right.
And I mean, think about it. It could be the Yankees' worst nightmare if he becomes a free agent and stepping in would be Steve Cohen. And it doesn't seem like there's a limit there. Now, he's from Northern California, so the A's would be out of it because they're not going to play in that stratosphere. But the San Francisco Giants would, Don.
They might.
They've got the money. They've got a money printing machine. Now, you could say, well, the Yankees, they have more money than anyone. Yes, I understand that. But they are a team that is very able to draw a line and say, this is what we think is reasonable, and we're not going to go past that. But is Judge so big as the face of the team that they would fly in the face of what they know would be wrong? And would the fans put pressure on them to do that? It's really interesting because I think because he's homegrown, he's more popular than Cole. He's more popular than Stanton.
Sure.
He's more popular than Gary because Gary hasn't performed and Aaron has. There's nobody that's even close. He is the guy, and we know this, guys. In New York teams, they love the homegrown player. And Aaron was drafted by the Yankees, up through the Yankee system, has only worn a Yankee uniform. Players, fans love that. So I'm just wondering, and we're going to try to get a little bit of a feel here from everybody out there, is this guy a must-sign no matter what?
I think the fans will judge it, no pun intended, based on how he plays this upcoming season. Michael, if he plays 100 games, I think the fan base will understand that you can't give him a long-term deal. But if he stays healthy and has a monster year, then I think they'll clamor for it. And as far as him testing free agency, I mean, the Yankees are not going to get outbid if they really want him.
But if they think, you know, 7 years is the only prudent thing, we're not going to go past that, there will be a team that will give more. There just will be. There'll be a team that might not pay them more, might not pay him more money. I don't think anybody could outbid the Yankees. But if the Yankees say, listen, analytics tell us it's ridiculous to go more than 7 years, then they might not go more than 7 years, while the Giants might give him 9.
Yeah. Well, again, they will have a revolt if he comes off an amazing season. I don't think they will if he's hurt. I think Yankee fans are smart enough to realize the sacrifice long-term you're making if he gets hurt.
But Do you agree with me, though? If they signed him now, they don't have to bid against 29 other teams.
No.
So they could get him at what they – if they give him a fair market value offer of 7 years, is he going to, okay. like, say, I'm going to – I'll take the – I'll turn down the $240 million because he hasn't really hit the big payday yet.
No.
You know, it's all been arbitration. He hasn't hit the big payday. Now, this year I think he's going to make close to $20 million. Just off of arbitration, but in terms of the long-term deal that sets you up forever, that hasn't done it. So if you wave that under his nose before spring, you know, during spring training, does he do it? I don't know if he'll do it. I'm not sure.
And then it's on him. You know, and then do the fans turn on him for not taking the deal, waiting for more? But, you know, you have to ask the question, what is he going to look like at 35, 36? He's a big body. He has been injury prone. And I would be concerned that at the back end of that deal, you might have a player that's just not available to you. And you know how that irked Yankee fans, you know, down the stretch of CeCe's contract. And then when they weren't getting the Harpers and the Machados, it felt like, oh, you got all those big contracts, and now you're not going out and get the real special players because you're locked in to all these deals. Now you're locked into Cole and Stan. They're not going anywhere. And now you're going to add a third. He's a great player. There's no question. I really just want to see him do it this year.
And then, you know, the Yankees have, and we mentioned this yesterday, they have some heavy lifting to do when this lockout ends. Because if you make a trade with the A's for Matt Olson, you're probably going to have to sign Matt. I mean, he's got 2 years before he becomes a free agent, but you're going to give up a lot of capital to get a Matt Olson. Or do you bring back, you know, do you bring back a Rizzo? Which wouldn't be as many years. Or do you bid on a Freeman? Now, you know, there's a word out there that they could go after Freeman. Well, if they go after Freeman, that's a 7 year deal for an old player too.
Yeah.
That's what the Braves don't want to do. That's why he might be available. Because the Braves don't want to cross that line. And coming off a world championship, and he was great, fans might give them a little bit of a slide. Now, the Yankees have done this before. Remember, they let Matsui get away after winning the MVP of the World Series. Let him get away. He's a free agent. They said, no, this is the downside. We're not giving that long of a deal. And they turned out to be right. They turned out to be right. Very few of those long-term deals really work out. Very few of them.
Unless you get, you know, lightning in a bottle right away and you win the championship and then nobody cares how it ends up.
Mm-hmm.
And in that case, it's still not like it's great for the whole time, but you just don't care.
Right, because, you know, you're signing a guy to win a championship. That's why, although he didn't win a championship, yeah. and he certainly wasn't my closest friend in the world, the signing of Mike Mussina is one of the great free agent yeah. signings you'll ever get. All he did was produce, never missed a start, never hurt. And it was so good that he signed a second contract. And CeCe's contract was so good that he signed a second contract. That shows you that it works. But, now, Mussina, they didn't win a championship, but CeCe, they did the first year. That made it worthwhile. Now, look at Mark Teixeira. You gave him an 8-year deal, right? Last 4 years, he was terrible. Injuries broke down. He was awful. And then people started the shift. So he went from a 300 hitter to a 240 hitter. A lot of things changed.
Yeah.
So that's why you really got to do your homework. But who better to do homework on than a guy who's grown up in your system? You know him better than anybody.
Right. And remember, Freddie Freeman in September is going to turn 33.
Yep.
So if he's asking for north of 5 years, that's...
Oh, yeah, he definitely wants more than five
yeah,
years.
So you're going to be paying him until he's almost, you know, 38, 39 years old.
Interesting stuff. 1-800-919-3776. Well, let's go to the phones and see what you're thinking about. Let's go to Will in Massapequa. Mill, why don't you start off?
Hey, guys. How you doing? I was actually going to propose, I'm all for extending Aaron Judge and everything like that. And I was reading an article the other day that, like, over the time that Aaron Judge has been up with the Yankees, he's been worth, like, over $150 million to the team.
Right.
So my suggestion would be to almost pay it forward with him in the sense of you're getting him for, it's going to be, like, what, $17 million this year? What if you bought the last year of this arbitration and everything like that and made it a 7-year deal, but buying this year? So give him, boost him up from 17 to whatever you, the number I think you suggest, Michael, 35,
mm-hmm.
and then make it a this year for 35 and then the remaining six for 35.
Well, I mean, that could work, but Will, what you're kind of hinting at is what teams don't want to do. I mean, that's how teams get into trouble when you pay for past performance. They've gotten an unbelievable deal with Aaron Judge in the first 5 years of his career. When you look at WAR and how he's produced for them and what they paid, yeah. But now, what, are you going to give back all the advantages you have by overpaying him toward the end? That's something that they have to weigh, because they've got to sit down, analyze everything, and say, how good is he going to be at 35? How good do we think he's going to be at 36? And that's what the players are fighting for right now. The players like Aaron Judge that really missed the big payday. But I don't think he's going to miss a big payday. But he's not going to get what Machado got. He's not going to get what a Soto eventually gets, because he's going to be 30 years old in April. And all the actuarial tables tell them, there's no way you're even close to the player that you were when you're 28, when you're 35. There's no way. Especially without performance-enhancing drugs. People get old. People get old. Except for Chris Paul, people get old.
Yeah.
See the year he's having again?
Unreal.
They might win the championship. And we were wondering, was that a good deal? You know, they gave him $40 million a year at the age of 38, 37. The first 2 years have been great. My contract's up when I'm 62, so I'm going to ask for one of those rare 20-year deals from ESPN Yes.
That's like what Bret Hart was trying to get with Vince McMahon back in the day.
Yeah. I want to see how much do they like me and how much do they think I will be worth when I'm 82.
You want them to show you something.
Show me something. Show me something for all the years I've been underpaid.
Right.
Well, I'd be here till I'm 82. It's a great – I was thinking about getting a 40- or 50-year deal myself.
Nice.
40 or 50?
Well, I'm 42 now.
No,
I signed a 40-year – because if you sign on till 82, I'll say to them, you love Michael till he's 82. I want the same commitment, even though I happen to be younger. So I would like a 40-year deal.
They call that super deals in radio.
Yeah.
So Junior Brown just tweets, Earth to Michael K. We're talking Yankees. Money is not an issue. Get and keep the players you need to compete. So, Junior, so that means that if you think that he's not going to be a good player – at 39, you'd give him a 9-year deal just to keep him? That's not how it works, especially not on good teams. Not on teams that are run well, because every contract bleeds into the other. The Stanton deal has stopped them from doing things that they might have done. I mean, that's just the way it works, because there is no endless spigot of money. And if the players get or if the owners get what they want with the new tax, where if you go over a luxury threshold, the tax would be 100% and losing a first-round draft pick. No one's going over that. And that's what the players don't want. No one will go over that. They just won't. So you see, I love that. Well, they're the Yankees. I know they're the Yankees.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that they're going to have a $600 million payroll, if you want them to or not.
And those fans will go ballistic 3-4 years from now if, you know, Stanton, Cole, and Judge are broken down. Yankees aren't aggressive in free agency because they've got too many bad contracts. They can't move. And what are people going to say? Why do we give these contracts to these guys that are breaking down? You know, they loved Stanton last year because he had a great close to the season, and they love Judge because he had an MVP year. What is the attitude going to be if he plays 60 games this year and is out? They already turned on Cole for losing the wild card game.
Right. Yeah, he had a bad game against the Red Sox. Oh, what a terrible signing. The guy finished second in Cy Young, but screaming it was a terrible signing because he had that one bad game against the Red Sox.
Yeah.
All of this has to be taken into account. All right, we'll take a brief timeout. The lines, it's like Christmas, they're blinking.
Wow.
So many people want to talk about this. We're here for you. Don't worry. It's Michael.
Okay.
All right. Kay, LaGreca, Rosenberg, and you right here on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Hey, buddy, hey.
Catch the show on demand wherever you want. Just subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts. This is the Michael K. Show.
What's going to happen with Aaron Judge? Do Yankee fans look at him as a must-have?
The fan base probably has no problem giving the contract. He played 148 games last year. I think Yankee fans are really curious. They should be smart and say, let's not give him anything yet. Let him go out there, be a beast in 2022, play 150-plus games, compete for an MVP. That'll be two straight years of being healthy, and then I'll feel good about giving him a long-term contract. But, Michael, if he gets hurt again and plays 100 games, games. Are you willing at a guy that's going to be 31, give him a 6-7-8 year deal for a guy that's really only put a couple of full seasons up because he's gotten hurt?
The Michael Kay Show.
And I would give Brittany what she wanted.
On 98.7 ESPN.
All right, so we don't talk that much golf here, except when Peter goes gaga over Tiger.
Golf is garbage.
But Saudi Arabia is starting its own golf association. I think they're calling it the Saudi Golf League, SGL. And they're trying to recruit people off the PGA Tour. And Phil Mickelson, who's 51 years old, one of the great players in the game, one of the great players in the history of the game, mm-hmm. is certainly seemingly open to the SGL because he thinks that the PGA does not do right by its players and keeps them from making as much money as they should or could. But this jumped out at me. I don't even know if you saw this, Peter.
Okay.
So he's talking to a gentleman by the name of Alan Shipnuck, who is putting together the finishing touches on his book, Phil, the rip-roaring and unauthorized biography of golf's most colorful superstar.
Jabroni Pumpleduck.
All right, so he was talking with Mickelson, and he said about dealing with the SGL, quote, they're scary MFers to get involved with, but he said the word. We know they kill Khashoggi and have a horrible record on human rights. They execute people over there for being gay. Knowing all of this, why would I even consider it? Because this is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to reshape how the PGA Tour operates. They've been able to get away with manipulative, coercive, strong-arm tactics because we, the players, had no recourse. As nice a guy as PGA Tour Commissioner Jay Monahan comes across as, unless you have leverage, he won't do what's right. And the Saudi money has finally given us that leverage. I'm not sure I ever want the SGL to succeed, but just the idea of it allowing us to get things done with the PGA Tour. Is he out of his mind, Peter? I'm going to overlook Khashoggi. I'm going to overlook the fact that they execute people for being gay. I'm going to overlook their horrible record on human rights, but if I can get more stuff out of the PGA, I'm cool. You know how bad he makes himself look? And some of the PGA players have just attacked him for it today.
Who's responded? I think, let's see. Tiger Woods.
Justin Thomas.
Let's see. It's an interesting take from Phil.
It's crazy.
By the way, though, are you, I don't know. Things like that don't surprise me from Phil.
Phil's he's an odd duck.
Listen, I'm not passing judgment on the entire situation. I don't know anything about the what is it? SGL?
SGL.
I don't know anything about it. But I will say that's an interesting reason to be okay with it.
Really? You know? Think about that. Like, I mean, even if he wanted to do this, why would you reveal that you know all of that stuff about
them? Beyond that, why would you, if you think that the deal makes sense, and even though you don't love everything about what's happening in the country, you don't look at it that way, it's business, we should do it, okay. But to specifically point it all out and then go, but if it could give us some leverage, we should do it. That he made it worse for himself.
Absolutely, he made it worse.
You could have just said, "Hey, you know, listen, it's not my that's not my fight to have, whatever." But instead, he points it all out and then goes, "But if I can get it, Monahan, well, now that it's not a good play."
He he certainly seems like he beats to a different drum.
That's Phil. Guess.
Yeah, it is Phil. Well, I'll try to get some of the reactions, but some of the players say it's incredibly egomaniacal of him. We'll see. I just wanted to bring that up. I thought it was really amazing that he would say that and admit how bad these people could be. Admit it. But I'm still going to deal with them because, you know, wow. Let's go to Alan on the Upper West Side. Alan?
Hey, Hey, how are you guys? I'm trying to get this off the phone. Okay, there we go. Listen, before I tell you what I called for, just another spin on what Phil Mickelson did. I don't think it's great that he came out and said all those things, but he's just being open and honest because it's at least he's not doing it like the NBA and what they're doing with China and all the stuff that goes on there and what they've done.
Yeah, but that's an interesting point, Alan. But you know, I almost endorse the willful ignorance of the NBA because they make so much money from China because they're not coming out and saying, "Listen, we know the human rights there is horrible, but we're making money." They're not commenting on it. Phil Mickelson saying, "I know they killed Khashoggi. I know that they kill people just because they're gay." All of that, and he's still doing business with them. He's admitting it. The willful ignorance.
Idiot take.
Yeah. But I will say, the willful ignorance goes beyond ignorance. I mean, it's lying.
Right.
Like, the NBA is not. It's beyond ignorant. They're choosing to leave it out. Like, it's not willful ignorance. It's willful deception or certainly a deception by omission.
Right. They're both awful, but the fact that one man actually says, "I know everything that's going on and I'm still going to deal with them," that's curious. The NBA could say, we don't know that stuff is going on. We don't know. We've heard rumors of it, but we don't know. Hey, the whole world is at the Olympics right now. Do they care?
Right.
That's unbelievable. But I have one quick story and then I'll leave you guys something that I feel that you can talk about. The FanDuel thing, thank you. I got in right at the end on Thursday before the Super Bowl, and I got a box and the $20 FanDuel credit. I ended up getting 0 and 3 with my numbers, but I got the exact opposite of how it landed.
Oh, my.
So I guess that person won the half and the full game. So what I ended up doing is I took my $20, I added a few extra dollars, I took Peter's suggestion, I played the Nets +4.5, and I parlayed it with Curry over 16.5 points. So I ended up winning. I got $100, and then I turned around and put the $100 on the Brooklyn Nets to win everything at 600-1. So if I get a little lucky, I could win $700 because of you guys. So I just wanted to thank you for that.
Nice, not bad. That's pretty good. Good luck.
Then what I wanted to mention, and you guys can talk about this, all the stuff with the MLB and everything, what we're looking at, and this is not political, but we're looking at a big money shift of how the super wealthy, just in our society, is taking the money and they're moving it and they're going to take more and a higher percentage of it. And so do you think any of the ticket prices or when the beer hits $20 and $25, those prices aren't coming back down? And it's just hurting the little guy. And without getting into it, just all the people that they're hurting with the pandemic, so spring training games, everywhere else, everybody that has a supply and job, minor league players. I mean, you could just break this down into
minor league players are not affected because they're not on the 40-man roster. They're able to play their games. They'll play their minor league games even if the season doesn't start on time. Minor league players that are not on the 40-man roster can, in fact, play, and they are training right now. But the higher the prices go, the way it gets answered is if people can't afford it, they don't go, and then the prices go down. But as long as people continue to buy the beers and continue to buy the tickets, they're not going to go down. They're just not. It's called supply and demand, right?
It's the name of the game, baby.
It's tough. I know it's tough. I mean, in today's world, growing up, I couldn't have gone to a game. You know why I was able to go to games?
Because
the tickets were $1.50.
Right.
The worst tickets, upper deck, last row, was $1.50. That I could handle that. But I always say this, and I don't want to come off as defending anybody. The places where the tickets are the most expensive, if you don't expect or feel that it's your God-given right to sit in the first row of the field, you can get into a ballpark for $20 anywhere. At Citi Field, at Yankee Stadium, anywhere. But people think, well, I want to have legend seats. Well, if you're going to have when I was a kid, box seats were $4. I couldn't afford that, so I took the $1.50.
You know what? I don't disagree with you. There are some sports where to get in at all is prohibitive. You know, like there are basketball venues. Knicks might be even close, where it's basically prohibitively expensive to even try to go. But
even to the worst seat.
That's what I mean.
Yeah.
Even for the upper deck, you're talking about $75. I mean, I don't know. Knicks, you can't really get tickets that easily. I don't know if, like, I'm looking on Ticketmaster right now. If you can just buy tickets to a regular Knicks home game. March 13th, Brooklyn versus New York. See tickets. Okay, let's take a look here. But, Michael, very often here to be in the top of the building, dude, the worst ticket is $100.
Yeah.
That's prohibitive. That means for a family of four, before taxes and fees, you're at $400. So, but to your point, Michael, at most all baseball parks, you have an option. There's an option that's either under 20 or close to it.
Even Yankee Stadium, and they have deals that you can get under 20. But then when I bring that up, people get mad. Well, I mean, I don't want to have those seats. Oh, okay, then that's a different story.
But even if you get, you know, $20 tickets and you bring the family of four, you know, that's $80, and then it costs $35 to park. And if you live in Jersey or Long Island, you pay the tolls. And then the kids are going to want a hat, or they're going to want a hot dog or a soda or a pennant. You know, so you go to the game and you end up paying like, you know, $200-$300, which you're probably willing to do on a Saturday against Boston, but are you going to do it the next Tuesday against Milwaukee?
Let's see. If you wanted to go April 3rd, oh, that's Arlington, Texas, so it doesn't matter. Sorry.
Well, let's put it this way, okay? The median household income in 2020, that's the latest I have, was $67,521.
Right.
So let's say that after taxes, you're taking home, and I'll be generous here, $40,000, probably less. $40,000 with a family of four, right?
Mm-hmm.
Can you go to any game? And if you do, it's a treat. It's that one game treat. Because the money is not, you don't have disposable income.
Man, I'll tell you what, Yankee Stadium ain't that cheap. On a Sunday Red Sox game, you're not getting in here for less than $85. This is Sunday. Oh, sorry. This is Thursday, April 7th. Thursday, April 7th, 105, Yankees, Red Sox. And I am looking at section 424. And to try to get into section 424, you're talking the $85 range.
And that's the Yankees selling that, or are you looking at a secondary market?
That's Ticketmaster. Yeah.
Well, that's different. Maybe the Yankees have a lower price.
No, I don't think there's anything lower than Ticketmaster. That's usually. It goes through Yankees.com.
Now, we mentioned the Patrick Mahomes situation.
The Boog situation.
Right, and Boog texted me. I guess somebody told me, keep my name out of your mouth. But
wow.
Patrick Mahomes, just a minute ago, goes, you all just be making stuff up these days, and he has three laughing, crying emojis.
I mean, listen, it must be hard that you go to a game and you get caught in the one moment you're having an annoying conversation with your girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
Your fiance, it's a pain. I get it.
Let's go to Brody in Hightstown. Brody, what's up?
Hey, what's going on, guys? Love the show.
Thanks.
Just wanted to chime in on the Phil Mickelson situation. You know, I know you don't talk much golf. This one's for Don, because I know he loves it. But, you know, it just cracks me up. You know, a lot of us would kill for the money these guys have, so it's tough to argue when you're talking about this much money. But the way that the PGA has a stranglehold on a lot of these players as far as marketability-wise,
mm-hmm.
what he said is definitely not exactly how I would have gone about it. But, you know, to act like all these billionaire owners and organizations have clean hands is kind of crazy. You know, it sounds to me when I went through that article that he was really trying to just put the other side out there. Like, even like on a different scale, but even with you in passing the other day, you weren't necessarily saying that the owners have a bad bad rap owning the team, but he knows that there's a bad side of it. But even with that, he personally knows over 20 tour players that are considering doing the switch to that league, or, you know, to that organization. And
well, you're bringing up different things, Brody. I would agree with you that the PGA probably has a stranglehold on their earning potential, although they're making good money, but they think they could make more. And Mickelson's smart enough to know that. But the only problem I had with it, Brody, why would you mention all the bad things they're doing? But I'll look the other way just so we could get more out of the PGA. Makes them look really weird. Mm. That's all I'm saying. I'm not saying that he's wrong about what he's saying with the PGA. Weird. I mean, when you're saying we know they kill Khashoggi, we know they kill gay people, we know that the human rights are awful, but we're going to hold our nose because it's going to help us get more money. That's a bad look. I guarantee you that within the next day or so, Phil Mickelson is going to come out and try to clean that up because enough people close to him are going to go, are you kidding me?
Right.
What are you doing? Let's go to Greg in Tom's River. Greg.
Yeah, I just wanted to talk about the ticket prices you guys were talking about a minute ago. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a joke. The owners continue to get richer and richer off of television contracts, sponsorships, and things like that. The players just get richer and richer. You know, the average ball player now makes enough money in 1 or 2 years to last them a lifetime. So they just keep raising, making more money and raising the prices higher and higher on the tickets, the beers, the concessions, the shirts, the parking, everything. You know, don't they have any kind of a moral obligation to kind of make it so the average guy can sit in a decent seat once in a while? I mean, do we have to sit up there with the pigeons all the time just to afford to go to a game with our kids? And why do they think kids aren't playing baseball anymore in this country? That could be one of the reasons.
But wait a second, Greg. Wait one second. I hear exactly what you're saying, but you think other sports are cheap? People, kids are playing football.
No, they're all the same.
Right. But
they're all the same.
So that you can't say that's the reason that the kids aren't playing baseball. All the sports are incredibly expensive to go to. I don't deny it. I know you're right. Now, in terms of, like, the average guy getting close to the field, but that's always been the case. The numbers were different. But that's always been the case.
But of the four major sports, baseball was always the more affordable.
And it still is.
Because there were more games.
And it still is.
But it does get obnoxious when you consider the amount of people that you fill Yankee Stadium with. Now, Madison Square Garden holds, you know, 18,000 for the Rangers and I think 19,000 or 20,000 for the Knicks. But Yankee Stadium holds over 55,000 people. You know, 50. So they've got the ability to cheapen the tickets a little bit, but, you know, some of them are really expensive. And the parking is ridiculous. I mean, so there's a lot of things to factor into it. Turns people off.
They don't own the parking.
No, but it's still something that you have to factor in unless you take the train.
Right, and most people do now. That's why those parking garages are going out of business around Yankee Stadium, because people are taking trains.
Well, we'll see now.
Yeah.
The train has not exactly been the safest place, subways and all that recently, so it'll be interesting to see how that goes for this upcoming baseball season.
Fred in Utica. What's up, Fred?
Yes, this is Fred in Utica.
There you go. Damn right it is. How are you, Fred?
I called you last summer. I'm the builder. Called you about Michael Kay and the bunt, throw to first base. Thank you very much. Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I got another suggestion better than that. Better than forget the bunt to begin with. Please, you can't sign Aaron Judge for more than a year.
But then he's not going to sign. So do you want him or not?
Fine, then you wave goodbye. And you use the money and bring some ball players in there. You can't depend on one guy all the time. There's 9 guys on the team. Forget one guy. Wave goodbye.
But you've got the other 8 guys. So do you want the great player, or do you just want to wave goodbye to the best player you have?
And then bring in somebody else. You never know what's down the road, Mike.
But Fred, are you going to bring?
You can't take these chances when a guy's 32 years old.
He's going to be 30.
He's going to be. I know what you're saying.
He's going to be 30 in April.
He's not 32.
He's 30. He's not 32. He'll be 30 in April. He's
30 years old. Whatever. I wouldn't do it. But let me. Can I say one thing about overtime in baseball and football? You guys are making such a big thing. You put a guy on second base. That's the craziest thing I ever heard of because you didn't earn it, right?
Okay.
All you got to do is, after nine innings, you want to keep away from these long innings. You get three balls, you're out first base. How's that?
But that's still
three
that's
balls. Not, but it's not, three balls. That's a wall.
So you're going to change the rules? Well, first of all, you're not, Fred. The runner at second base is not going to come back this year.
Yeah, it's done.
Also, Peter, people on Twitter pointed out you looked at opening day for the Yankees. That's why the ticket's $85.
I saw
a wild coyote.
And Zamarit said on a weekday summer versus an unpopular team, Yankees sell $5 seats in the outfield upper deck. Yankees also have meal and beverage deals. Just got to look at the Yankee website.
Well, for the record, I mean, for the sake of argument, I will look again and check some more. I hear you. So basically, you can go to the worst possible Yankee game and get a good price. But
Anthony
if it's a good
Greek,
one, forget
Anthony Greek said Monday, April 11th, standard upper deck seats start at $10.
Okay.
Bleachers, $29.
Yep, I see it now for Friday, April 22nd at the playing the Guardians, the big rivalry between the Yankees and the Guardians. You could sit basically on the face of the sun, but it'll cost you only $10. So that is a difference because you can't do that for a basketball game at most places.
I think every place.
A lot of $23 seats. Yeah, there's a lot for that. That's a fair point. For a regular Friday night, plenty of options for between $10 and $25.
All right, so take it back now.
Well, I wasn't trying to badmouth them. I was just looking it up. I'm sorry. I looked at the home opener. That was a bad choice. You can't go to the home opener for less than $85, but you can go to lots of other games for a lower price.
Come on, dog.
All right, here we go. Gerard Gallant is going to join us in just a moment, the head coach of the New York Rangers. That's right here on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
The Major League Baseball Players Association has released a statement.
Oh, here we go. This is it. We're back.
And this is after the owners had said that the first week of spring training games must be postponed because of the lockout. So the players have said, MLB announced today that it, quote, must, close quote, postpone the start of spring training games. This is false. Nothing requires the league to delay the start of spring training, much like nothing required the league's decision to implement the lockout in the first place. Despite these decisions by the league, players remain committed to the negotiating process. Now, I've told you 100 times, I'm not taking sides in this. I'm just not. But that's disingenuous, okay? Because let's say that the owners didn't implement the lockout. Now, when they implemented it, you could argue about that. So the players would not play under the current CBA. They hate it.
Right.
So they'd get all their contracts signed, and then when baseball's about to start, they would strike. So you're going to blame the owners for taking a little bit of the leverage away from them. We saw what happened in 1994. They didn't lock out anybody. They continued to play under the old CBA, and then the players said, you know what? We're going to really zap them. We're going to strike in August. And then that ended up costing the World Series. So that's a disingenuous statement. It really is. See, I don't know who they're trying to win over. As I've said a million times, this is not a vote of the American public. We don't get to decide who's right and who's wrong. Why release something like that? You know why there was a lockout? Because if there wasn't a lockout, would you play under the same rules? Because the owners, I tell you what, I guarantee the owners would guarantee to play under the same CBA. They would, let's go. Let's re-up the CBA for another 5 years. So if you went into the season, all you would do is you would hold the strike over the owner's head and you would call it at the worst possible time. That's a bad job by them. Come on, man.
But they see value in the court of public opinion.
But what's the value, Don?
I don't know.
I need to know.
Why rip Manfred? Because they know that's a popular thing. The fans can sink their teeth into that. They want to rally the fans against the owners, but how does that help them?
Now, if you're the players and you want to say, you called the lockout on December 2nd, right, in order to expedite the negotiating process, and we didn't meet until January. All right, you got a legitimate argument then. But don't say they didn't have to call the lockout. Well, then you would have struck if you didn't get what you want. So, really, both sides would be a little cute for my taste.
Just get to work.
Sit down on Monday, meet every single day, see what you could do. They didn't have to lock out. They didn't have to cancel the spring training games. So you're okay with playing with the old rules then? I don't think so.
But they think they're right, so they're going to say that anything that the owners do is wrong.
And the owners think they're wrong. So that's why we're in this position. They're both butting heads, and there doesn't seem to be any blink in either side. Let's see who blinks.
But
the fact
brilliant.
That the owners are flying into town on Monday, all of the executive committee, to me, that's a positive. But putting out a statement like that is just flat out stupid.
But if it wins the court of public opinion, maybe they see value in it.
But you would think that some people would see through it. You know, they didn't have to lock them out.
Fans are not going to be that. And this is no offense to fans that are following it enough to know what everything means. Oh, the billionaires are bad guys. They're canceling the games. The players want to play. Let them play. Going after Manfred, that's easy. The fans all hate Manfred anyway.
Well, Buster only was on Bart and Hahn today. And he said that the owners and the players, this is the worst relationship he's seen.
It is, without a doubt, the worst relationship that I've seen between Major League Baseball and the Players Association. I started covering the sport in 1989, and it's shocking how little contact they have, not only in the last 2 months, but, you know, leading up to the 2016 agreement, there was not much give and take at all. There hasn't been in recent years. I think there have been opportunities for the players to, you know, to try to win some financial landscape back by monetizing, you know, some of the owner's desires, like initiatives, on-field initiatives. Those discussions haven't taken place. The working relationship has remained absolutely terrible. And I got to tell you that there are a lot of people at the team level, you know, club executives, and there are a lot of players who are watching this play out with the lack of dialogue, saying, what the hell is going on?
Well, not much good.
Nope.
Not much good. Again, next week, I think, is the last chance saloon in order to play baseball when it's supposed to be played on March 31st. Because you need 4 weeks to get ready. And remember, even if it's settled on Sunday, you still have to ratify. So players are going to report for another 3 days. You got to sign 300 free agents. You got to make deals.
That's a joke, as far as I'm concerned.
As much as everybody's getting riled up about this, and you have every right to, when it does get settled, the next week and a half, 2 weeks, is going to be absolutely riveting, magical if you're a baseball fan. It's going to be like all those great, you know, when the NFL opens up free agency and you get that flurry of signings, that's what it's going to be. The NBA, that's what it's going to be. It's going to be created in a bad way, but it's going to be everything. It's going to be just like what it was before the lockout when they were trying to sign all those free agents, times 100. Because teams are still going to have to make trades, too. It's going to be unbelievable. All right, we'll come back. Got a lot of things to unpack. 1-800-919-3776. It's Kay LaGreca, Rosenberg and Yuan. Yes, and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Hey, buddy, hey.
Catch the show on demand wherever you want. Just subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
This is the Michael K. Show.
George Gallant.
16 come from behind victories. That's the most in the NHL. Is that something you kind of want to curtail here in the second half of the season?
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, like I said, you could spin it whatever way you want to spin it. I think it's the team that's never going to quit. We go whenever at a hockey game for their talent. We come back and we win those hockey games. But again, I want us to play 64 minutes and let's get the lead instead of coming from behind all the time. But I'll take the W's whatever way we can get them.
Michael
K Show.
He's very gallant.
He really is gallant.
On 98.7 ESPN.
I really like that. We can really use that a lot. Was that the five Michaels and then K-Show?
Yeah, I thought the exact same thing. That was really good, Anthony.
Can we hear it again, Michael? Or is it part of the whole rejoin, Anthony?
Part of the whole rejoin, but shout out to Ray Dinahan. He gave me the idea earlier today.
Oh, Ray.
Good idea, Ray.
Look at Ray.
You know what? Even though some people say Ray is just sitting around, staring at the wall, doing nothing. No.
Excuse me?
He came up with something brilliant.
That was brilliant.
Michael K Show. That was Midge. I love it.
You can't like what the Knicks are doing. The back page of the Post today was Worldwide Mess.
Oh, no.
Playing off Worldwide West, who, according to SNY, has gone to James Dolan and put this whole dumpster fire on the lap of Tom Thibodeau. Because if Wes says it's Thibodeau, then it's not Leon Rose and Wes. So who has Dolan's ear? Now, it's also interesting to note that after one of the recent, or halftime of one of the recent games, Julius Randle came over and gave Dolan a big hug. So maybe that means he's not going to get traded. But also, Julius Randle talks glowingly about Thibs. He said, I ride and die with that guy. So we'll see who has the ear. But Worldwide West is he's a mover and a shaker. He was when he worked in an agency, he's a power broker. He knows how to get things done. So if, in fact, that story is true, which was first reported by Ian Begley of SNY, that's not a good sign for Thibodeau. Because I think Worldwide West probably knows how to present his case to Jim Dolan, because that's Worldwide West is really good like that. I don't like the fact, if he did do it, that he did do it. Now, who hired Tom Thibodeau? Did he take the job himself? Leon Rose hired him. Gave him a big contract. Used to represent him. So if you're going to say it's all on Thibodeau, who won the Coach of the Year last year, aren't you saying that the guy that you work with, Leon Rose, made a big mistake hiring him? People just have like a selective memory about stuff. So if the coach is really bad and it's his fault they're losing, then it's your fault. You hired him. What a mess. It can't go worse for the Knicks. Their next eight games out of the All-Star break, they probably will lose all eight. Unless something unforeseen happens, like what happened with Golden State. Because now teams are going to take the Knicks lightly. And they might take them lightly when the Knicks are playing on the road. I don't think the Knicks have the advantage of being taken lightly when a team comes into the Garden. Because people want to put a show on at the Garden. But when the Knicks are on the road, you could take them lightly. Who knows?
It's an interesting point, Michael.
Thank you.
That they don't get that benefit, even though they stink. Because people want to, it's packed. You know, even if a team stinks, if every night you show up to see that terrible team and there's 19,000 people there, it's showtime. You know? Usually when you play a team that's bad, Don, on the road, you show up and there's 9,000 people there. But not in New York.
No.
But you're always going to feel like it's Broadway.
But there's always going to be teams that take nights off in the NBA. So you're going to get your wins. That's why the win-loss-loss-loss-win game in the NBA is tough, because they will win games they're not supposed to win, but then they'll follow up with losing games they're supposed to win. That's what happened with Golden State. They beat Golden State, and they're going to win four in a row, and then they lost three in a row to three teams that they should have beaten easily.
Now, Richard Jefferson and Kendrick Perkins gave their take today on ESPN. And Richard Jefferson admitted that he's unsure what the Knicks can do moving forward.
This is a basketball disgrace. This is a team that everybody in the world wants the Knicks to be great, because the Knicks are iconic. We all grew up watching the Knicks, but their version of basketball they've played for the last, 10 or plus seasons have just been inconsistent. It has been lacking any sort of effort or vision. And my biggest issue here now is that, where do they go from here? What do they do? What can this team actually accomplish? Everyone having them possibly going to a conference finals. Stephen A., even though he's talking about he can't stand the Knicks, he was killing Brooklyn earlier in the year. Apparently, Stephen A. can't watch basketball in New York at all anymore. So I don't know what's going to go on. I just don't know where this team goes here.
Now, Kendrick Perkins said that he thinks that some of this has to do with Thibodeau.
When I look at my guy, Tom Thibodeau, and I look at guys' body language, I'm looking at his body language. It's almost like guys are grown tired of hearing his voice. And that's what happens with Tibbs. I thought the 2 years off, maybe he would have changed. But the 1 year, you could deal with him. 2 years, all of a sudden, you get tired of hearing his voice. And I think Tibbs has to tone it down a notch.
But can he? You know, Don, you brought this up. Can he change? Now, Tom Coughlin changed.
Yeah.
But it's hard, man. And he's older than Coughlin was when Coughlin changed.
But Tom Coughlin changed because he had a team that was on the verge of something really special. They had gone to the playoffs in 05 and 06.
But he was also on the verge of revolt.
No, he was. But yeah. He made the necessary changes. The players loved it. And after an 0-2 start in 07, they go on a run and they win the Super Bowl. Tibbs can adjust, but what is that going to mean? Is that going to mean they're going to go right back to what they were last year and be a 4 seed and easily compete for the playoffs next year?
No, I don't think they could catch – I mean, I'm somewhat dubious that they can get to the 10th seed. They're 4 games back in the loss column.
Right, but I'm saying next year.
No, that the conference is too good.
Yeah. Hope that the COVID situation rights itself next year. Kyrie, now there's the new big three in Brooklyn. Milwaukee's not going anywhere. Sixers are obviously very good if Harden returns.
Well, how about this? Coming out of the All-Star break, Heat at the Knicks Friday. Then Sunday at the Garden, 76ers at Knicks. Then that Wednesday, March 2nd, Knicks at 76ers. Then the Knicks go to Phoenix to play the Suns.
Yeah.
Then they're in L.A. to play the Clippers.
That's right.
Then they're in Sacramento to play the Kings.
At least those first five are all on TV, though.
Is that ESPN important to you?
On TV.
ESPN or ABC.
What else do we have after that? All right, so then you have the Kings, then you have the Knicks in Dallas against the Mavericks, then the Knicks at the Grizzlies, then the Knicks in Brooklyn, then the Trailblazers come to beat the to play the Knicks, so we'll see how that goes.
Freudian slip.
Wizards at Knicks. Those are two games they could win. Jazz at Knicks, game they should lose. Hawks at Knicks, that's who they're chasing. I mean, I don't want to go through the whole schedule, but the first eight out of the gate, it's not a good look. It's not something that you feel, oh, that's great. They'll do fine. 76ers at Knicks should be a loss. Knicks at 76ers should be a loss. Heat at Knicks should be a loss, so that's 0-3. Knicks at Phoenix should be a loss. That's 0-4.
Here's my question.
Sacramento?
My question is, what do you think what do real Knicks fans really want from the second half? Like,
I think they want to make the playoffs.
So, if you're a Knicks fan right now, are you thinking, I know that it's been an absolutely brutal stretch where we lost basically 4 or 5 games here at the end of the first half of the season that we completely handed away, but we're still technically in striking distance of the play-in, so let's go for it? Or is that total fool's gold, and who cares about making the play-in? Let's just see what we have and who we have
about it. 10 games in, I think you're going to know if you have a legitimate chance to make it. Then if you have a legitimate chance to make it, then you continue to play your veteran guys because I think it's important to the organization to make it. But if it's a total, like it's going to be an unbelievable crapshoot to make it, then you got to go with the young players. I think that's the only responsible thing to do. You've got to play Reddish. You've got to play Toppin. Mm-hmm. You've got to play Grimes. You've got to play McBride. You've got to play all of them and see what you have and what you have moving forward. But it's going to be a delicate balancing act. Because I think that to them, there probably is value to making the play-in.
Yeah. And I think the fans are starting to lose faith in the front office. So even tanking and getting the high pick, they probably don't have a lot of faith that that's going to work itself out. So might as well just grab what you can. Maybe you catch lightning in a bottle. You win the play-in game and you cause a stir. I don't know.
If I could take lightning in a bottle... First thing that I'd like to do.
I don't think those are the words.
No?
Oh. No.
I'd like to.
We're all grown up now.
I would like to beat the Heat and then the 76ers and the 76ers again and go to Phoenix and beat the Suns.
I don't even know what
you're ruin everything.
Pretending to sing.
Time in a bottle.
Right.
Don knows when I'm stretching it. Let's go to Isaiah in Bethlehem. What's up, Isaiah?
Hey, how you guys doing?
Good, you?
What's up?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm going to try to make this quick because last time I got complaints that I was taking too long. I'm going to just say, Mike, I got a question. since you said, I listen every day. The other day you said the Knicks are worse than they are last year. Do you think that this team this year would have done the same last year or gone farther, or what do you think?
All right. That's a good question, Isaiah. But the other teams in the East, did they get better like they did? Because even in last year's team, I don't know if they would have won the same amount of games against the East the way it is right now. But they wouldn't.
Okay,
they
right
wouldn't
now,
be,
yeah.
They wouldn't be. I don't think they would be 11th. I think they would definitely be at least in the play-in, or maybe maybe even a top six. But there's not that much difference to this team, other than you lost Reggie Bullock, and who's the other guy that they lost? I can't I think. Although Bullock is the guy that probably Thibs wanted back.
Mm-hmm.
Derrick Rose is hurt. But they brought back mostly every. I mean, this is a team that returned.
Every tweet I'm getting so far, every tweet I've gotten so far is diehard Knicks fan would rather see them play the kids. Making
really?
The playoffs to lose in the first round is not what I would want. That's what I'm seeing so far.
Run
on
up
the old Twitter.
But
yeah, maybe run that up the poll.
But you can't very well just know that you're going to lose in the play-in. You don't know that.
I mean, by the way, okay, you win the play-in. Are you winning the first round? Who are they winning a series with?
No, but they'd be in, and that's you're selling your fans on back-to-back playoff appearances.
Yeah, that's fine. That's what you want to sell fans. But if the fans are saying I don't want a first-round playoff loss, then who cares what you're selling?
But my question is, how do they know? I mean, if you're in the dance, you're in the dance. Did anybody think the Hawks were going to do what they did last year and go to the Eastern Conference Finals? You have no idea. Maybe they rediscover it. Maybe, Derrick Rose.
Yeah, that's
Rose...
the thing. If you go on the run, to make the play-in game,
right.
At that point the team's different. And now maybe you've become a new organism altogether.
Let's go to Adam in the beautiful, beautiful enclave of Princeton. Hello, Adam.
Hey, guys. How you doing? This is a great conversation about the Knicks. I'm a long, long time, long-suffering Knicks fan.
So what would you rather?
Number one, I think.
Would you rather they play the kids or try to make the playoffs?
I would rather they make the playoffs. Look, we have not had a lot of playoff series to watch in a long time around here, and as much as it would be great to play the kids and get experience, you need to make the playoffs. Like, we haven't had a phenomenal draft as a result of finishing seasons poorly in a very long time. I would much rather see them try to make the playoffs. But the point I was going to make was, I think people are forgetting how big of a role Derrick Rose played last year with this team, and he was a huge reason for why they did what they did. Missing him for as many games as they've missed him for this year, in combination with the fact that Kemba Walker has not done anything close to what was expected, I think that's the reason why they're struggling this much. They don't have a real playmaker. And when they go against teams that do have those types of players, it's just obvious. It is a huge issue for them. That's why the ball doesn't move late in the game. The offense looks stagnant. They can't score. They don't really have guys who can really score when you need it. It's all because they're not getting the looks that they need to get, and they're not doing that because they don't have someone like Rose who can drive to the basket.
No,
I couldn't agree
with you more. But Adam, think about it: how precarious this roster is. If a 34-year-old injury-prone, albeit really good player, is hurt and everything collapsed, so what you did this year in building this team, you put all of that emphasis on Derrick Rose being so important, and the other point guard was Kemba Walker, who can't stay on the court and can't play back-to-backs. So, I'm sorry. As much as everybody hated Elfrid Payton, at least he served a purpose defensively. So, I mean, Kemba can't play defense. And we saw during the playoffs, Derrick Rose can't play 35 minutes a game. He just can't. If the whole show is predicated on Derrick Rose, that is quite an indictment of the front office. As much as I love watching Derrick Rose play, but the whole team's built around a 34-year-old point guard with terrible knees. I don't know if that's a good look. Let's go to Derek in Staten Island. Derek.
How you doing, guys? I just wanted to go off on the point on the Knicks. Following the point with the last caller just said, I think D. Rose was a huge part of last year, and I think it has something to do with this year, and Kemba didn't show up. But regardless, their fourth quarter meltdowns is really what to talk about, are just epic proportion. If you want to make some money halftime or third quarter, if the Knicks are up, you take that other team. You take that other team right then and there, money line, spread, whatever it is, because you're going to capitalize, because they are a mess in the fourth quarter, second half of games. And one question, that song, Time in a Bottle, what was that, Gordon Lightfoot?
No. Harry, not Harry Chapin. It was
Harry Nielsen?
No. Died in a plane crash.
Richie Valens, of course.
No. Oh, this is going to bother. Okay. Jim Croce.
Yeah, that's close to Harry.
At least I got it.
You did. You did. I just sang it. I didn't get it. You like that song, Peter?
I can't say I have a lot of history with it.
Really? Oh, give it a listen. It's really beautiful.
All right.
Because it's really the story of life. If you could put time in a bottle, the first thing that I like to do is to save every day for eternity. Is that it, Don?
Till eternity passes away.
Yeah. Let's go to Mel in Queens. Mel!
Yeah, what's going on, guys? Look, I called you guys yesterday, and it seems like a lot of the things that I said, Perk, he said the same exact thing in regards to Tibbs, right? Mm-hmm. But another reason I was calling, because I had a question I want your guys' take on it. I heard about Rich Paul and Michael Jordan versus LeBron James, right? And I feel like LeBron James had the harder road, because here's the thing people don't talk about. When the road was harder for Jordan, he was losing. I mean, he was 0-3 against Bird, and he was 1-3 against Isaiah. When Jordan started winning, it was when the teams were, like, weaker. He lost to the weaker team. Every team that LeBron lost to probably got about 2 or 3 Hall of Famers on every team. So social media, coming in at age 18, coming in, people expecting somebody to be the next Michael Jordan, I feel like LeBron James had the harder role, and I'm going to kind of get you guys take on that.
Well, 1 second, though, Mel. I mean, Michael Jordan in the finals beat a Utah team with 2 of the top 50 players of all time, and Stockton and Malone. Right. Then he beat a great Phoenix team with Charles Barkley, mm-hmm. close to his prime. They didn't beat any chumps, okay? Just because they got through Bird and they outlasted the Detroit Pistons. Sorry. One other thing, Mel, those Knicks teams were really good.
Mm.
You can't say that Jordan had an easy ride. Sorry.
Seattle was good, too.
Seattle was very good. Yeah, I can't – listen, you know how I feel about the Condor. I love LeBron, but to say that Jordan had an easy ride and LeBron didn't, no, I don't believe that. Let's go to Trevor in Queens. Trevor?
Hey, how you doing, fellas? So my issue is this. I know we are calling for kids to be fired, but the fact that we don't have a point guard.
By the way, I'm not calling for
incident.
Trevor, I'm not calling for that, but please go ahead.
A lot of the fans are.
Right, yes.
You know, calling for him, for us to go in another direction, not you, Michael. but with that said, I think that's the main reason that we're falling apart in the fourth quarter, because we have no floor general. So until the front office gets us a point guard, unfortunately, I think we're going to continue to see this as Knicks fans.
Well, I think that's a problem. I mean, they don't space the floor well. They don't seem like they have clutch players. I think that teams have caught on to Julius Randle handling the ball as much as he does, and they strip him of the ball when he starts to dribble into the paint. So, yeah, not having a reliable point guard is a big deal. But remember what they put their faith in. A guy who got bought out, and it was a great story, you know, a heartwarming story. But that's who they put their faith in, Kemba Walker, mm-hmm. who probably Thibs didn't want, and Derrick Rose, who's always hurt. Now, you also wonder about the fourth quarter. You know, one of the knocks on Thibs is he plays his players too much. Do they get worn out in the fourth quarter? I think it's more the point guard than that, I think. I think also now they're playing, and I said this the other day, they're looking in their rearview mirror all the time. They're waiting for bad things to happen.
Well, at this point, after the first couple, I already thought this. But after the Nets game in particular, Michael, the second a game starts, all they're thinking about is, are we going to blow this late? Like, you get out of the first quarter, the score doesn't matter. Now the entire game, they're going to be thinking at some point, when is the momentum turning? And by the way, the other teams are aware of it too. They're always going to think we have a chance.
I'm sure the Nets went into the locker room at halftime and said, we're going to come back from this.
Yeah, don't worry. This is a beatable team.
Mm-hmm.
Let's take a brief timeout. 1-800-919-3776. That's the number. A lot of stuff still on the table to talk about. We'll do all of it right here on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
Greatness is not an accident.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody doesn't fall into greatness by happenstance. They become great because of drive and determination the desire to be great.
I would agree with that.
And I got more confirmation of that today. Jeff Passan was on yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
Really strong spot.
Very strong.
Very strong. Really brought it. And there was some talk where he said, I'm just refitting my crown. He thinks he's the best guest that we have on the show. While this went on, people were calling Steve Young and telling him what was going on.
How amazing is that?
And Steve picked up the phone and called Andrew Gunling and said,
what's
going on? Is Passan promising the guy something that he should be the number one guy when I'm the number one? This is one of the greatest quarterbacks who ever lived, and it matters to him that he remains at the top of the mountain of guests for this show. That's what you're getting in Steve Young.
That's incredible.
He's the best.
And you cannot tell me, Andrew, that does not get old. It never gets old that he's calling you. Steve Young.
I try every day.
I mean, unfortunately, this slogan was taken by Inside the NFL, but it's the show the pros watch and listen to.
That's
now, I don't know if enough time has passed that we could steal it.
Why not?
That's going back to the Nick Bonacani, Len Dawson years.
Now, what if things get weird, though, and Steve just starts calling Andrew all the time?
I think Andrew, that's one of the perks, I believe, for Andrew in this job. He loves the fact that these people that he used to put up on a pedestal just call him to shoot the breeze.
I love this guy.
But taking a weekly spot that he does, what, 4 or 5 months out of the year?
And he doesn't take a dime. He doesn't have to do that spot.
He wants to be the best at it. What did he say? The problem with retiring was that you're not good at anything anymore.
You're not great.
Now he realizes that he's the best interviewer, and he wants to keep it and hone it.
Now, I also give credit. I think it's important to Passan as well. But I don't know if it's that important. The Young story I loved. By the way, my lonely existence has now been extended.
What do you mean?
My family had a 7 o'clock flight out of where they are, and it's delayed 8 hours.
Oh, 8 hours.
Eight hours.
Is that a delay? That's a whole different world.
I said, why don't they just cancel it?
It's like a cancellation.
So now I have to sit here alone in the dark. Nude.
Nothing.
I
mean, the Young Stars game, right? Is that all you get?
Celebrity game at 7 on ESPN. I would really be excited about it if Peter was in it.
Butter knocked me off the air
last night, so I'm sure you're going to watch.
Well, since I got to go to Stamford, I got to be out of the house tonight anyway.
You driving tonight?
No, I mean, but I could be. Maybe I come sleep over.
Oh, nice.
Wow, yeah, that would be fun.
You know, I got to be up at 7 for rehearsals, but you got a sleeping bag?
We've got a lot of beds in the house.
Well, I would rather if I
you
do
can
it,
sleep
though.
In Charlie's bed.
What? How? But you and Jody's bed, I'm sure, is huge.
Well, you're not going to sleep with me.
No.
Well, why not? Is it a California king?
Look, I'll get behind anything.
Gunling just texted me and said, Steve calls him sometimes after the interviews asking how it went.
Oh, wow. That just
is
for him.
This guy has a gold jacket. He has one of those hideous mustard-colored Canton jackets.
Most of these former players that aren't half as good as Steve don't put any effort in, don't care if it was good or not, go through the motions, do five or six of them a day, forget who they're even being interviewed by, and done. Steve, Hall of Famer, comes on and wants to be great. Come on. How is that not the coolest thing ever?
It's impressive.
I also think that he, you know, he's from the area. It means something to him. He probably has a lot of people that tune in. Let's go back to the phones.
Anything worth doing is worth doing great.
Oh, I've always said that, Don. I've told you that for years. Don used to phone in this show the first couple of years.
Actually, I've heard that.
There was an entire season of this show where he read books on the
air.
Not, and not out loud.
And I got to tell you.
Just read books.
It was the absolute right thing to do.
You'd do it again.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
I would look at him with these plaintive eyes, like, you going to help me out here? No, I'm not.
No.
He finished off the Bible in like a week.
Is that true, Don? You finished the Bible?
Yeah.
No, it was the Theo Fleury book.
Well, that's your Bible.
The hockey Bible, yeah.
That's the Don LaGreca Bible, is the Theo Fleury book.
Now let's go to Dan in New Jersey. Daniel.
How's it going, guys? Happy Friday.
What's
up? Same to you.
I have a couple of takes here. This one might be a little crazy. But
talk to us.
Can you compare the Leon Rose and Tom Thibodeau regime at all to the Joe Judge, Dave Gettleman regime? I know the Giants didn't make the playoffs that year, last year, but they got progressively worse as this year went on. And Gettleman was just one of the worst GMs in NFL history, his stint with the Giants. And then my other take is, because I think they need, like, maybe see something like for the Knicks, like their Joe Shane and their Brian Dabo. Shout out to Eli.
Yeah.
So who do you want who do you want their Joe Shane to be?
I like that guy they hired from Minnesota. Or I would do what the Giants did and take from the best organizations. Like, take someone from the Nets. Take someone from the Warriors. That's why I think the Giants coaching staff is so good right now. Well, they haven't played any games yet, but they found the best organizations in football and took those guys.
Well, I mean, Dan, we have to pump the brakes. They haven't played one down yet for Brian Daboll, but I can't compare Joe Judge and Tom Thibodeau. Tom Thibodeau won the Coach of the Year last year. Yeah. He's won it a couple of times. He's an established coach. He's been around forever. We didn't know what Joe Judge was. He was part of winning programs with New England and Alabama, but we didn't know what he could do as a head coach. He was just a kid, so no, I don't see it there. I know you. Well, that was a long way for you to go, but I'm not buying.
No, there's no. But I do like what the Giants have done just from the pedigree. You know, you take a coach from the Buffalo Bills, their offensive coordinator. You know, comes from a great organization. You know, Wink Martindale comes from, you know, you get a defensive guy, you want to get somebody from Baltimore, right? Like, so you kind of feel like they're heading in the right direction, but we don't know. But the problem with what the Knicks did is that they hired an agent.
Yep.
So it wasn't even that they went to a great organization and pilfered somebody from, you know, the San Antonio Spurs or the Golden State Warriors or something. They just got an agent. So far, not good.
You know, at the time, we thought they would go for Masai Ujiri, but he had a year left on his deal, and it looked like the Knicks didn't want to give up anything to get him from Toronto. And then by getting Rose, Ujiri, who, you know, has reportedly told confidants that he wouldn't mind going to the Knicks, and he signed a long-term extension with Toronto. So by getting Rose, you lost any chance of Ujiri playing out his deal and then coming here. I don't want to, you know, slam the door shut on the Leon Rose era, but right now it's the Leon Rose era. This has been an awful year and an awful offseason, most importantly, and then didn't do a thing to clear up the logjam that is stopping Thibodeau from playing the people he should be playing. Didn't do a thing at the trade deadline. That's not good. Go to Sean and Queen. Sean. Shawnee, what's the mission? Well, he's out.
All right.
Sad. Let's go to Steve in Port Washington. Steve.
Hi, guys.
How you doing, Steve?
Thanks for. I'm doing well. Thank you. And I called to say thanks to Don for last week bringing back that old basketball cheer harass them, make them relinquish the ball.
Yeah.
In the mid-1970s, I was at Haverford College, and they used that cheer, except instead of the ball, they would call it the spheroid. So I just thought, for historical sake, maybe Don would be interested in that. Thank you.
Well, I got that from – I worked at a pharmacy through college, and one of the pharmacists was Bill Hansen. He's no longer with us. He was a great guy, big sports fan. He used to go to Columbia games, and he said they used to chant that at Columbia games. Very highbrow, Ivy League thing to do. Harass them, make them relinquish the ball. And it stuck with me. I'm glad it had an effect on someone.
So I don't think it's a stretch to say that in your younger years, you were, in fact, a drug dealer.
Harass them, make them relinquish the ball. I'm not a drug dealer, but
you worked in a pharmacy, right?
I did count pills. Well, under the supervision of a pharmacy.
There you go. Pill counter.
I'd have to mix sometimes the salves and ointments.
You're a big ointment guy. You always have been.
And I would deliver it.
Sure.
You would deliver ointment. Would you also apply it?
That's a great question.
No,
and
I'm
fair.
Not a doctor.
You don't have to be a doctor to apply ointment.
Yeah, you could apply
it. Not like you're having surgery.
Well, they just asked me to deliver it, and there's instructions on there for them to apply it to themselves.
Did you help kids out that were looking to buy things that would have been embarrassing?
I will tell you that I was a very popular guy among my friends who needed condoms.
The USC section, we call it.
And that's where I found out about, all the different types. And I became kind of an expert.
Tell us more. We've got some time.
Yeah.
Well, you don't...
Go ahead.
Lambskin protects against pregnancy.
Stop it, please.
Right. But
no,
not against disease.
Kids in the car, stop. Let's go to Danny.
He asked the question, Peter.
But that's right. he actually was telling us, like, intimate details of it.
Well, it's not that intimate. It's basic. It's natural.
It's things they should know.
It's not a six-year-old sitting in the car with mom and dad right now. They shouldn't know that.
I think they have any idea what I'm talking about if they're six.
Danny in the Bronx.
Danny.
Hello. So just before I ask you a question about the Knicks, I just think that since you have nothing to do tonight, Michael, maybe just one time, Michael, just hit the bubach. One time.
Great idea.
But anyway.
You know what?
Was that a blunt?
Danny, I got to tell you. Let's say that I had this epiphany and I wanted to do it. I wouldn't know where to buy it. I wouldn't know what to do with it. I wouldn't know how to
drive for that.
What if Peter brought it?
New York City's not that far from. Assuming
so you want me to drive?
But anyway,
you want me to drive 45 minutes from where I am, find a drug dealer on a corner, and buy bubons?
Well, make it sound like it's just so seedy.
It is seedy. If I did,
Peter was trying to volunteer his services to come by tonight anyway.
Sure.
Now he swings by, brings some with him. You guys partake.
It's a Friday night.
Have some munchies. Watch the All-Star festivities.
Crash. Wow.
Well, I'll consider it. Thank you, Danny. Did you have any
sports? It makes for a great open on Monday.
Really quickly, if it gets to the point where Thibodeau is removed or dismissed, who would make the best head coach for that squad?
Well, it's according to which way they go. If they decide to go with kids and do the long build, I mean, then you want to bring in a guy that's better with kids. Maybe you bring in a Kenny Atkinson, something like that. But if you're looking to win, maybe you bring in an established coach. But, they have some heavy lifting to do to be close to winning. I mean, we thought last year they were still – didn't we say that they were 2 or 3 years off?
Yeah.
Now it's longer. Because last year it seemed like they were making a destination for people that want – and by the way, Damian Lillard came out today and said, I want to stay here in Portland and win here.
Sure.
So that seems like everybody's lottery ticket that likes the Knicks – this Damian Lillard. By the way, he's in his 30s, but he says he wants to stay out there. How are they going to get better? How?
Unless they draft somebody that becomes special.
Right.
Get lucky in the draft.
By the way, wouldn't that be a miracle? Like, that would be the miracle they need, is to somehow pull off one of those moves where they don't have the ping pong balls and they just get lucky.
What was Curry 7? Giannis 15, like something like that, where you draft a player and don't think much of it, and he becomes a star. And they're due for that.
Yeah, last time it happened was Patrick Ewing.
Yeah.
1-800-919-3776 is the number. Oh, wow. Wait, I got to take this before we break because okay. Thomas and Rockaway Beat said that Don almost had a really bad effect on him. Thomas, what happened?
I'm just, you know, drinking my nice little green tea, Bigelow tea over here.
Nice.
And Don's talking about how six-year-olds have no idea what the heck is going on in the back of mom and dad's car.
And right. Do you have a six-year-old in the car?
No, I don't. But the fact that I almost spilled my hot Bigelow tea all over me really, don't maybe
that.
Just need to call
to stay
in.
On brand. But, I don't think a six-year-old's going to understand what we were talking about.
Lambskin protects against pregnancy.
Stop it.
Right. But not against disease.
Here's what we do, Thomas, okay? Because we're a full-service show. If you spill the hot Bigelow green tea on your lap, Don will personally bring over ointment to help you out.
Yeah.
Wow.
I'll apply it.
Yeah. You will apply it.
Yeah,
despite
will
not being a doctor. That's beautiful. Right. All right, let's towel off, everybody. Come back, take phone calls, 1-800-919-3776. It's Kay LaGreca, Rosenberg, and you on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoon starting at 3 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.